Welcome to Careertools. This week, highlighting soft skills on your resume. The questions this cast answers are, what are soft skills? What am I doing wrong with soft skills on my resume? And how do I show my soft skills on my resume? For our 15th anniversary, we asked ourselves, what could we do to make the purchase of a license a no-brainer for you? The wildest idea we could think of was adding in all of our products. So we did. Right now, the license comes within the interview series, the resume workbook, effective relationships, the interview creation tool, roadmap, things I think, and three random things, as well as the show notes for all of the free manager tools and career tools costs over our 15-year history. It's a pretty well-known fact that I can't math, so I'm not even going to try and tell you what the value is, but it's way more than $200 a year. If you've been thinking about making the purchase, the time to do that is now. Soft skills are something that are super prized by hiring managers and managers in general, but for really good reasons. Soft skills are all of the ones that make it easy for us to get on and work with other people. So things like communication skills and adaptability and helpfulness and all of those things. If we don't have any hard soft skills, we can't get any use out of the hard skills we have, like engineering knowledge or, you know, knowing how what heat flow is and that kind of stuff. There's no use to those things if you can't work with other people in order to make them happen or to make use of them. And those soft skills often appear on job descriptions as requirements. So it will say requirements, adaptability, a learning mindset.
Yeah, exactly.
Dependable, those kind of things. And it makes sense that if you see something on a job description, that you then match it with the things that you've done, the things that you have, right? If it says you need a degree in communications, you put on your resume that you have a degree in communications. Right? If you do, obviously, you don't just make stuff up. So it makes sense what candidates do, which is to say, I'm dependable, I'm adaptable, I have a learning mindset, but it actually doesn't work that way. Or at least that's not the helpful way to do it. And it's not the way that makes your skills the most believable or the most impactful. And there's a different way to do it. So in this cast, we're going to talk about how to do it so that it does influence the hiring manager the way you want it to.
Mm-hmm. All right. So today's outline, we're going to start our conversation by talking about what soft skills really are. Then we're going to talk about following the three rules of soft skills on resumes. Rule number one, speaking against your own interests. Rule number two, always include context. Rule number three, show, don't tell. And then we'll discuss how to fix your resume. So by doing things like first removing soft skills, then following the no adjective rule, and removing intensifiers.
It's easy.
Super
so
easy.
Let's talk a bit more about what soft skills are. So they're kind of the personal attributes that enable someone to interact effectively and harmoniously with other people. So they're the opposite of hard skills. Hard skills are the things you learn how to do at school, at university, on the job, wherever you learn how to do them. So programming is a hard skill because you have to learn how to do it. It's hard because it's difficult, but it's also a hard skill as opposed
right,
to a soft
exactly.
one. Okay? Hard skills are the things you have to learn in order to do the job. Soft skills are the ones that allow you to do that job with other people.
Yeah.
For a Heidi like me and Sarah, an unfortunate necessity.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing, guys. Our job descriptions consist of these two parts, right? The first ones, as Wendy mentioned, those hard skills, those are your skills, your abilities. When we're talking soft skills, we're talking about traits, we're talking about characteristics. Now, the hard skills part, the degree or code you know, is different than things like soft skills. So our soft skills are things like interpersonal skills, leadership abilities, project management, right? Problem solving, work ethic, teamwork, dependability, conflict resolution, adaptability, perseverance, communication skills.
And actually, project management could be both.
Could be both.
Because, mm-hmm. because if you're like a PMP is trained to manage projects, but often when it appears in soft skills, it's just the ability to organize your own work rather than that kind of being able to complete an MS project plan type thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, in terms of the soft skills, the hard skills, it's something we want to include on our resume. We want to blend the two, right? We want those categories to appear on resumes. They appear on annual reviews as well. There's a blending of them throughout our work lives. So we want to include them on our resume. Let's talk now about following the three rules of having our soft skills on our resume. Logic says that if you're a hiring manager, right, they want to hire somebody with good communication skills. That is, you should probably, it would logically say in your brain, and you should probably then put on your resume, possesses excellent communication skills.
Hey, like they said they wanted it. Now I'm going to tell them I have it.
Exactly. Now, that makes sense, but the logic is wrong. It's mostly because human beings are reading your resume and human beings are proven not to be logical, right? As much as we want to say we are, that's the thing. Putting something like that on your resume, has excellent communication skills, breaks our rules. If there's something similar you're thinking of putting on your resume, you can test them against these rules. So the first one then is speak against your own interest.
This makes no sense because common sense says the resume is there to sell you and your skills. If you look at any advertisement for any product, it always says, you know, shampoo, great at washing your hair and leaving it bouncy, or cars, like, great at making you feel like an awesome driver, which is true, right? The resume is there to sell your skills, so it should sound like an ad, except it shouldn't, because if you speak too much in your own interest, at the minimum, it's off-putting, and the most, it's like self-aggrandizing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it just sounds like you're blowing your own horn just too much.
Yeah.
I saw something that said it was a product, and the person promoting it just went, "It's great." Okay, but you would say that because you're selling it, right? And it's the same in your resume. Of course, you're going to say, "I'm awesome," but what we want is the proof.
Exactly. So people will put a summary, for example, that sounds like this. I'm a high-energy, results-driven professional with over 10 years customer service experience in a managerial capacity, excellent planning and organization skills, proven interpersonal and motivational ability, ensuring a strong team approach and the attainment of maximum performance levels and productivity. A dedicated manager with the ability to obtain outstanding results in a challenging environment.
Right. Why wouldn't you want to hire that person? They're high energy, results driven professional with planning and organization skills and interpersonal and motivational abilities. Why would you not hire that person?
Absolutely. Now, if all those things were true and you knew that I possessed those skills, which I was claiming to possess, of course you'd hire me. It only makes sense if that's actually true. Now, the problem is when our brains read a paragraph like that is written by the person themselves, we don't actually have proof that any of it is true. It's a self-assessment at this point, said in our own interest, and that does not look good on us.
It's not persuasive. It's like if you go to Best Buy, for example, and the sales rep comes and says, I'm an expert in television technology, you instantly doubt that that's true, right? If you're an expert, why are you working in Best Buy?
Right.
You know, there's a million questions that come up when someone says that.
Well, why are you telling me you're an expert? It's weird.
Yes.
It just isn't,
Why is that the first thing that you're telling me, right? Human nature just... we just ignore anything that people say on their own behalf. That's why when we look at products on Amazon, we look at it, we read the description, then we go down to the stars, and then we read all the reviews, because it doesn't matter what someone says about their own product.
Exactly.
What it matters about is people that bought it are happy, then it's probably a good product.
Mm-hmm, exactly. What's really true about what they said?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be really persuasive then, you speak against your own interests. So that sales rep, that TV salesman that Wendy was just speaking about, if rather than saying, I'm an expert in television technology, they would say, you know, I don't know everything about TV tech, but I do know our range.
Right.
It'd be far more believable.
Okay. Yeah. I know that, you know, there's 20 TVs in Best Buy and you know all of them. Okay, good. I that's believable. Knowing, being an expert is not, you know. And so a paragraph like the high energy, results driven professional, blah, 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 is counterproductive. It doesn't make the hiring manager believe that you have those skills. In fact, it weakens your belief in their skills, right? If you have to say it, then you probably don't have it. And the other thing about those paragraphs that really makes me laugh is I have never seen one that says, I'm a bit iffy on project management. I tend to drop balls.
Yeah, or, exactly.
I don't get on with everybody in my team. And that causes problems sometimes. Or I can be huffy and put the phone down. All of which are true about people I know, including me. And the words they choose are always the same. If you look at 10 resumes, I bet you 90% of the words are true. And you can tell that people aren't being honest, entirely honest, because there's no negatives. And they always match the soft skills required on the
posting.
Job perfectly.
Yeah. Okay, you could reread the job posting. That's good. Good to know.
It's apparently, everybody's a copycat. And the other thing that happens a lot on resumes is somebody will say, I pay attention to detail, and then there'll be a mistake on their resume, or more than one.
Spelling error.
Or, you know, I'm really good at communication, and they won't email you back for 3 days. You know, it's amazing how well resumes belie what people tell you about themselves.
Oh, I believe it. Mm-hmm.
And recruiters hate these paragraphs for the same reasons I do, because they're all the same. They don't tell you anything. They're not helpful. And hiring managers just ignore them because they don't know what to do with them. And so if you're writing a list of vocabulary, a vocabulary word list, I guess, that you've copied off somewhere or you've copied off the job description in an attempt to highlight soft skills when they're not linked to results, is seen as self-aggrandizing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And it's being ignored. So you've just wasted 5 lines of your resume. So don't do that.
Don't do that. Not useful. All right. Next up then is always include context. Now, there's another reason that paragraphs like the one we just discussed don't work, which lead us to the right thing to do. Soft skills, to be clear, do not matter in isolation. They only matter in the context of execution. Right? While activity is underway, while people are engaging in it. So like the manager's planning skills aren't important if they're not in a role where they have to do planning.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's great to have that skill. So how does that help?
I was watching the cricket this morning because I'm in the UK and the cricket is on the TV. And it's like, you know, the star batsman saying, I'm really good at swimming, really good at front crawl. Okay. But the cricket pitch is dry. Hopefully it's not. It's raining right now. But front crawl doesn't help you be a good cricketer. I don't know. I guess it might help you build up muscles and stamina. But it's not something that's really important. What's really important is, can you bat and stay in and get runs? Being good at front crawl doesn't matter. And that's what, you know, people include things because it's in the job description or because it's something they're really proud of. This one really hurts me. It's something they're really proud of. But if it's not relevant, it's not hurting you. And making people take things off their resume that they're really proud of is really hurt. It hurts. It hurts them. It upsets them. And it hurts me. But I know it's not doing them any good if it's not relevant to the role that they're going for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So going back to that, is it a batter or a cricketer in our example?
The one in the show notes is a defensive lineman, which all the Americans will understand.
Which Americans will understand.
Yeah,
okay,
we'll
so
go with that.
We'll go with defensive lineman. Somebody playing American football. Now, American football player, if he's putting out a resume, which is not really how it works, but let's say he's putting out a resume. If he was going to include on his resume that he's really great at the front crawl, he's wasting space that could be used for something more important. And even if the skills are more relevant than front crawl, for our defensive linemen. They still only matter if the person that's using them is going to achieve something important to the organization, right? Great communication skills only matter if you're using them to deliver more projects on time and on budget. But that's why companies want great communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want them just because they want you to be really good at chatting during the coffee break.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I really like conversational skills. We want our people to be chatty. That's not really it. It helps you get the job done, right?
Right.
Like, customer service skills. They matter if you're using them to decrease the number of complaints that your customers make. These things are all important, but again, they require context. Attention to detail matters if and only if you're using your attention to detail to save the company money when you're reviewing contracts or proposals, right? We want to find a way to highlight our soft skills through our abilities.
Yeah, we want to talk about the results that we get from them. So customer service skills matter if you're using them to reduce the number of complaints customers make. There's a whole bunch of other things that you could be using your customer service skills. We're not saying it's only this one example, but we're saying you have to have an example of something that results from those skills, because otherwise they're pointless. So for instance, I speak pretty good German. I used to speak pretty good German. I use it once in a blue moon when we get a customer service query here, and the person writes in English and then they write herzlichen Grüße at the end. And so I reply with that. That's not a good use of my German. So telling Mark, oh yeah, I really want this job and my German is excellent. He'd be like, okay, great, good. How are you going to use that to help me help manage your tools? Well, it doesn't. So you've got to be able to show that the skill you have will benefit the organization.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. And in a way that isn't self-aggrandizing, right? Mm-hmm. In a way that matters to the hiring manager. You want to show the results you got.
It makes me think of people who are volunteering. You know how there's people that volunteer because they want the outcome for whatever it is. Like my dad volunteers doing outside things. So he like does trees and coppicing and fences and things, right? And he volunteers because he wants to see the area that where he volunteers as a strong outside space where the nature is working for itself, and like we're taking care of it and all that kind of stuff. But there's other people that volunteer to be able to tell you that they volunteer.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Mm-hmm. They want to be able to say, yeah, I give 10 hours of my week to whatever. And it's not the end product. It's not their customers or whatever that they care about. It's being able to say I'm a volunteer. And it's kind of like this in that it only matters if you really care about, it's like donations as well. People donate money because right. they
to get
want
their name on the building.
Yeah, exactly. and we don't like that. So whatever the skill is, you've got to think of it in terms of the end result. Are you telling me that you have that skill because you just want me to know you have the skill? Or are you telling me you have that skill and this is how you use it to the benefit of other people?
Right. This is how you'll help us with mm-hmm. that skill. Absolutely. September 29th and 30th, we'll be hosting simultaneously two in-person conference events. Kate will be with our group in Austin, Texas, and Mark will be with our group in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Both events will host a small group of 9 or fewer attendees, socially distanced, wearing masks, and learning how to be more effective managers and communicators. Register today at manager-tools.com/training. Seats are limited. All right, so next up then, we've got show, don't tell. Now, the good news is, if you have a career tools formatted resume, you've already done this. The hard part is kind of already over. A career tools resume, guys, just as a reminder, consists of 3 parts for each role. That is a little bit on the administrative data, a prose paragraph describing responsibilities, and then a bulleted list of actual job accomplishments. Now, if you aren't familiar with that format, or if you haven't heard one of our previous casts, on the page for this podcast, I think we're going to link Right, Wendy? We'll link to the other.
You'll find all the others so that you can have an idea of what we're trying to talk about. Mm-hmm. But let's start with some examples just so that people can hear them. Mm-hmm. So one example, achieved 100% complaint resolution within target times by developing standard query resolution flowcharts and training colleagues. This person clearly used problem-solving skills, their ability to communicate with colleagues, and probably a great deal of perseverance in making this achievement, right? They've gone through all of the complaints. They've thought about what commonalities they are. They've created a flowchart to help people know what to say and what to do. And then they've gone and trained their colleagues. There's a whole bunch of soft skills in there. But the important thing is, what did they do? How did they use those soft skills to the benefit of the organization? They achieved 100% complaint resolution. So as a hiring manager, if you see that, you know that they have all those skills and they know how to use them for the good of the organization and in this case, for the customers too. So there is a bit of reading between the lines, but your resume is only one page. You can't write all of the detail. I use my problem-solving skills, but you can leave them there for the outcome. And the other thing I often say is the resume is the headline, not the story. So the resume is the thing that makes you want to know more about that person. So someone who can achieve 100% complaint resolution in a customer service role, I want to meet that person and I want to know more details about how they did it and what kind of problems they had and how did they train their colleagues and all that stuff. And so I invite them for an interview.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
how it's supposed to work, right? Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to tell them everything on your resume.
Exactly.
You're supposed to give them enough for them to be interested and want to hear more from you.
Absolutely. All right. So another example, reduced project cost, $40,000 by achieving agreement for developed concept for big event feature ahead of schedule. Now, what that bullet point is saying, the rest of the story, is that this individual's negotiation skills were good enough to reduce the cost of the project by $40,000, right? A hiring manager who would know whether, for the size of the project he runs, that's a significant amount or not, and therefore whether skills or the skills that they possess are good enough or not.
Right. Because if it was a $4 million project, $40,000, if it was a $50,000 project, wow.
Right? That's incredible. It's, yeah,
or
it's
100,000 even.
It's all relative. It's
still, yeah. So you have to have the context of what they did. You have to have that knowledge, and hiring managers have that knowledge to give the context. Here's another one. Delivered 4,000 person, 4 million budget, Microsoft Hyper-V to VMware ESXi migration on time, on budget, and in scope using PMI principles. That person has amazing planning skills, because that stuff is tough. Project management, relationship building, because you don't go change people's software without getting some pushback. And they're focused on results, because they finished that project. And that is far more persuasive than the paragraph of skills that we listed. It's probably the same person, but it's way more persuasive that they delivered that project on time, on budget, and in scope than telling us, I'm a great project manager.
Exactly. Now, guys, what you'll notice in the three examples that we just did is that the judgment of how good the skills are or not doesn't actually come from the candidate themselves. The judgment of how good their skills are in those softer areas comes from the hiring manager themselves, right? The hiring manager is the one that knows the job that they want done better than anybody, better than the candidate. Mm-hmm. The candidate's only guessing on how the hiring manager wants the job done based on the job posting and advertisement that they've written. So further, the hiring manager is going to make, based on the attributes we write on our resume, the decision about whether the candidate's skills are good enough. The hiring manager is the one that makes the offer. And at this point in the process, the hiring manager is the only person with control to make any of these decisions.
They get to read your resume and they get to decide whether or not what they think is good enough. That one where it was reducing the project cost by $40,000, they know whether or not that's a good number for their team. And you don't.
You don't. Because you can't.
So, exactly. So, the judgment about how good you are comes from the hiring manager. It has to.
It has to.
And most people don't like that. And
yeah, fair.
I kind of understand why it's unfair, but it's the way things are. So, no point in fighting.
Exactly. It's reality.
So, if you've realized you've made some of those mistakes, let's go ahead and fix your resume. So, the first thing is remove the soft skills. So, if you have one of those soft skills paragraphs or a summary paragraph, take it out and put in more accomplishments. Remove phrases like problem-solving skills and professional speaking abilities or any of the other soft skills that we've talked about. Just take them out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Next up then is follow the no adjective rule. Now, another place that the wrong way to highlight your soft skills on resumes can be hidden is in the use of adjectives, right? Adjectives name attributes of things. Said differently, not what you did, but how you did them, the quality to which you achieved, right? Mm-hmm. And adjectives nearly, guys, always fall in the speak in your own interest bucket. When you find them, if you can, convert the adjective to a verb. We'll show you some examples of that. It can be done. And then you can just remove your adjectives altogether. So some conversion examples. If your resume says on it collaborative, change it to say collaborated.
Yeah. So collaborative is what you are. It's a mm-hmm. description of something you are. Collaborated is something you did. And then because you've written collaborated, you then have to say what you've achieved. It's kind of, you're forced into it, which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing. A really good thing. So another one then, persuasive versus negotiated, right?
Persuasive is something someone is, mm-hmm. and negotiated is something you did.
Exactly. Innovative versus created.
Innovative people create things. So what did you create?
Exactly. And then decisive to decided.
I make decisions. Okay. Tell people what decisions you made. What did I decide, right?
Exactly.
And here's some examples to remove because they can't be turned into an action. They can't be changed into a verb. Things like tolerant, optimistic, reliable, versatile, respectful, dedicated, energetic. If you can't turn it into a verb, then just remove it altogether because it's almost certainly doing you no good.
Yeah, it's just a waste. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then next, or last, I should say, is removing intensifiers. Now, guys, intensifiers are the part of the speech that intensify our verbs or adjectives. Make them stronger. So for example, I'm saying excellent negotiation skills versus just negotiation skills.
Or I negotiated this thing and $40,000 out of a $100,000 project, it's clear that I did it excellently, right?
Exactly. Again, going back to the let the action speak for itself, right? Or mm-hmm. I competently implemented a new CRM software system.
And as a hiring manager, I'm like, what does that mean then? Like, what's the definition of competent in this case? Is it on time, on budget, and in scope? Because that's the only way I think a project should be done, right? That's my definition of competently.
Right. And next up then, highly organized versus just organized.
Yeah. Or what did you organize?
Right. What did you organize? Exactly. Or strong written and verbal communication skills.
Says who?
Weak. Exactly.
Oh, you. Okay. That's why I discount that.
Right. Exactly. And then superior training abilities.
Again, like define superior.
Superior. What is superior?
There's a difference between saying superior training abilities and I get 90% of my training that I've given has an NPS score of 80 or above, right?
Exactly.
Oh, so the people that attended your sessions 8 out of 10 times will recommend that to other people. That's a much better, much more persuasive, a much better measure of how good a trainer you are than saying superior training abilities. And the other thing as a recruiter, I would look at those and instantly think it's not only what's your measure, because maybe we disagree about what the measure is, but also why don't you have the defined measure, right? So if Sarah can say 80% of the time she gets an NPS of over 80, I don't know if that's true or not. It's probably better than that. But she knows what matters to the people attending, and she's measuring it, and she knows what a good standard is.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody writes superior, they either are not measuring, or their achievement is bad, and they don't want to say it. So if Sarah's achievement was 80% of the time she gets an NPS of minus 80, then she wouldn't want to write that on her resume.
Right.
But she might write superior training skills. And maybe she thinks that is superior, but as a hiring manager, I wouldn't think it was superior. So it's either you don't know what you're doing because you don't know how to measure it, or you measured it and the measure is bad. And so it's all negative thought for the hiring manager or the recruiter. It's all, okay, what's this person hiding? And if they're hiding something, you don't invite them to an interview to find out what they're hiding. Right?
It's exactly. Just like,
why would I waste my time? I mean, if I found a skeleton in my family tree cupboard, that would be worth investigating, but not somebody's resume, you know, just because it's interesting to find out what they're hiding. It's not worth
it. Exactly. It's not worth the time. It is not.
So if you didn't agree with this before, hopefully that's another reason why you agree with us now, that accomplishments and measured quantified achievements are much more persuasive than just words like this. And intensifiers are almost always a judgment made by the candidate, either about their own skills or their accomplishment or the situation. And by now, we've been talking for half an hour, maybe by now, you know why that's not a good idea.
Exactly. All right. So then, guys, just to sum it up, your resume and the interview itself, they play two different roles. Right? They have two different jobs. That is, the resume gets you the interview, and the interview gets you the offer. The purpose of the resume itself is just to tell the hiring manager that the headlines, right? What you've done, how well you've done them. It's kind of an in and out decision, right? Either you've done what the hiring manager needs you to do, wants you to do, or you've not. It's a way for them to make that quick binary measure.
Mm-hmm.
Only once you're actually through the gate, that is once you're at the actual interview, does the way you did it matter. That is the soft skills piece of it. How you accomplished that. The soft skills, or the description of how you achieved what you did, or the story behind it, is what the interview is for. So by respecting the different jobs of the resume and the interview, knowing their place in the hiring process will help you be more successful at both.
Indeed. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a different topic.